She's April.
And she's Molly.
And we are
the Book Besties.
April's about to tell on herself, folks.
Everybody be fucking in that one.
Please flip that, Tom.
And we're 7 minutes in and have not talked about jack shit yet.
Welcome to Book. That's April. I hate her.
That's what I married. That's what I married completely. All right, besties, this season of Book Besties is proudly sponsored by Carpe Librum.
The only.
The one and only Carpe Librum. Bookish things for bookish people. So keep checking our social media and listening all season long for special perks and merch that you can get using discount codes.
Did you know what I learned? Did you know what I learned?
What?
They make one of the coolest freaking bookmarks on the market?
Yeah.
Did you know this?
They have a 13-step process that is like a propriety to them.
Oh, and yeah. I've seen them on the knockoffs on Amazon. They fall apart. Oh,
I have some knockoffs and they dent your book. So, so I haven't had a chance to check their bookmarks out yet, but I have four of their shirts. They're very comfy. They're all
size inclusive. I love their shirts.
They do not shrink. They're made here. They're made at their home shop. They screen print by hand.
My favorite part of their shirts is it looks like I could get tetanus from the typewriter that they use to make the font.
There's definitely like a real gritty and authentic feel to it. Yeah.
Like that's what I want, right? Like I want to feel like an old man is going.
As a librarian,
because I'm a bookish person,
right? We're both bookish people, for sure. As a librarian, I wear these shirts to work, and I get compliments on them all the time. So if you want your own cool shirts, go to BeAwesomeReadBooks.com. And for the month of September, you can use the code HELLOBESTIES to save free shipping on your order.
Shut up, free shipping?
Free shipping. Your girl loves free shipping.
Same.
I will pay extra to get free shipping.
I will pay that extra $10. All right, besties.
You use the code. The shirts are really high quality. They will not shrink. They are size.
Tag us on the socials when you buy it.
XL. Yes, please. Yeah,
we can't wait to see them, guys. All right.
All season long, we'll have deals for you.
All season.
All right, back to your episode.
Season nine! Season fucking nine, bro!
How is this season nine already?
We have no ability to say no. That's how.
To each other, actually. Yeah,
literally.
So we're very lucky to have a season nine. So thank you for continuing on with the podcast.
Thank you.
And we're lucky to have you.
Yeah, that was author Christy Boyce. Let me try that again. That is author Christy Boyce, author of Dungeons and Drama, the Dungeons and Drama series. And we met you this summer at the Columbus Book Festival, which was amazing.
It was wonderful.
It was such a good time. I was very peopled out, though.
It was such a wonderful and warm event. The staff is very great, but your live interview was fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Only because you guys know what's going on and you're great together. So you just kind of brought me along for the ride, but I was very happy to be included. So thank you so much for having me for that.
Thank you. I think Christy was the only YA author we interviewed there too. Cause Edward Underhill writes YA and adult.
Now I gotta go through my brain. Don't do that.
But I think I'm gonna turn around and look at my books.
Okay, that's a better way. Hi, Christy. Have you finished your school year yet?
Not quite yet, but we have like a week or two until it happens. So I am counting down. My son's going to go back soon. And then I actually go back to teach at Ohio State. And so I'm, looking forward to it.
The Ohio State. I've been friends with someone from Ohio long enough. I know you have to have that in there. So don't even try to play me, ma'am.
Okay, that's fair enough. So the Ohio State University with a capital the.
And that's from the shitty New Yorker. So
Molly literally said in a panel, y'all are disgusting, because when she introduced me, I said, oh, wait, and everybody went, I-O. She was like, y'all are disgusting.
my words were gross.
Gross. But I want everybody to know
New Yorkers don't do that. We just fight people.
Ohioans love Ohio, and We do not understand. We do not understand the skibbity toilet Ohio nonsense because what the hell? Just like
Kanye loves Kanye, man.
I feel like I
it's only not hear about the this. Same, Molly.
You, Texas, and Ohio, Texas, and Kanye, y'all like.
It's not Kanye. The same. Don't put me in anything related to Kanye. Dear God.
Thank you. Thank you. How about not?
How about not? I'll take Texas, I guess, but not Kanye.
No.
A little not bit right of Texas.
Now. Not right now. Not with all that gerrymandering going on. I'm not well,
that's
that.
True. Oh my God. Yeah, not going to start on that ridiculousness. But I know. Yeah,
so you're a Columbus local, native to Ohio too, right? Like I am?
Yes. So I technically was born in Kentucky, but we moved when I was three. Okay. Both of my parents were born in Ohio, lived in Ohio. So we've been here since, I mean, I moved away for just a little bit for grad school, but otherwise Ohioan for life. Oh, and so is my husband. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was actually born in Texas. We moved back when I was just 18 months old. So like, the only thing I know about Texas is 4 years. My husband was stationed there when I met Molly.
I bless Texas, right?
I'm in Virginia now, but like when people ask me where I'm from, I'm like, I'm from Ohio. Like I'm not from here. And there's a lot of really cool stuff about being from Ohio, and I'm going to get off the soapbox, but we did meet you at the Columbus Book Festival and it was amazing. There were a lot of people there. We actually met you the night before the Columbus Book Festival at like the preview event.
By the way, guys.
Yeah.
We went to sit down and chill and we're like, oh my God, it's Christy Boyce.
That was so fun.
And Christy, I got to tell you, because you witnessed this, and this needs to be said on pod.
Okay.
I apparently propositioned.
Time out. Abel's about to tell on herself, folks. Why not?
I apparently propositioned Matt Dinneman when the
three. What? Wasn't apparently. You actively did it.
I didn't. But when I told Molly and Katie about it, when he came over and was talking to you and me, Christy, and he was like, I want to drink the rest of this, but like, you're the only person here I know to me. And I was like, that's fine. I'll make sure you get back to your hotel. Like, I'll DM it for you. And I told Molly and Katie that. And they're like, you do realize that you just propositioned Matt Dinneman to go to his hotel, to take him back to his hotel. And I was like, not what I meant. So the next day I was like, Matt, he was our first author interview. And I was like, I feel like I need to apologize to you because like, that was not my intention. He was like, well, good, but I will have to delete my tweet that I sent out that I got propositioned by Bestie April. And I was like, I am so embarrassed, but you were there. Like I was not hitting on him.
I did not encode that at all. I was just like, okay, oh, they're friends. That's nice. And then that's as much as I thought about it. So I did have no idea.
Our friendship was relegated to a 10-minute conversation I had with him prior to meeting you.
Like but an he hour said, before.
You're the only person I know here.
Because we bombarded him. Because I went, oh my God, it's Matt Dinneman! And I dragged April and ran.
Well, I was just happy to be hanging out and I got to like kind of ride on your coattails and be like, I also know you guys. Hi, Matt. I was like very nervous, but it was nice to meet him. So
Christy, you and I have each other's cell phone numbers. We're friends. Of course.
That's very true. I'm just hanging out with my friends and I happen to have Matt Dinneman there and it's no big deal. So
we also have Matt Dinneman's phone number.
See, we're all friends.
You're very cool.
We're just
friends. We have not abused it. We've left him alone, but we do have his phone number.
If I had it, I may would have.
Girl, it's in an email that we share an account for. Like, you have his phone number.
Hi, I'm dyslexic and dysgraphic. You want me to go searching in an email for one phone number?
I don't want you to, because I don't want you to bug Matt Dinneman. Okay, back to the point. All right. This is par for the course that our first episode of the season with a guest, and we're 7 minutes in and have not talked about jack shit yet. All right, so we are 7 minutes in and we still have not done anything. So I'm going to introduce you, and then I'm going to have you talk about your book.
Again, because we keep just talking.
I don't know. I mean, if anyone's new here, this is pretty much every episode.
I'm really nine you found us randomly, season 9, episode 1. Welcome. But There's plenty more to go listen
That's
to.
That's fair.
Folks.
Yeah.
But I will say, if you are like, hey, I want to go listen to their back catalog, maybe don't. Because like, yeah, sure, you can. But like, if you listen to our first few episodes, we had no fucking clue
what we were doing. We're so awkward.
It was bad. Like our first one, we had it scripted and like, it was very obvious that we were not.
We weren't ready.
The podcast is better when somewhere. It's. Right. Yes. The podcast is better when it's just vibes. Yeah. So Christy Boyce is the New York Times bestselling author of Dating and Dragons, Dungeons and Drama, Hot British Boyfriend, and Hot Dutch Daydream, which, by the way, I put those on my TBR because they sounded really good.
Thank you.
She played her first role-playing game in high school and has been friends with that group ever since. In fact, she even married the DM. Girl,
shut up.
Nowadays she teaches psychology as a senior lecturer at the Ohio State University. When she's not spending time with her husband and son, she's usually writing, reading, or watching happy reality TV. What is happy reality TV? Like what kind of, what qualifies?
Right now we're watching the new Project Runway. Heidi Klum has come back.
Okay. I love,
oh my gosh, I'm so excited for it. I haven't watched it yet, but yes, I love Project Runway and I'm excited for Heidi to be back.
I want to know our thing that we do. So it's what? Like, we watch a lot of things that my husband and I have watched Project Runway every season that we could get a hold of. There's a few that like were on a weird channel that we couldn't watch. But anyway, other than that, we watch every season. We watch two episodes and then we each pick three contestants each. So we go back and forth picking who we think is going to win. And then we watch the whole season. And then like whoever wins, if we have a contestant that makes it to the end and wins, then like, obviously we're the winner. And then we used to get like what we call a card. And then we could play that card for something that we wanted later. Like if I want you to go out and get me ice cream or something like that. So that's like a thing for us for Project Runway. So it's
marital.
Like,
marital rivalry is what's up, man. So we do something similar. We do happy reality TV as a family. The Biggs family likes to do Masked Singer with dinner.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And the girls love it because they love to see if I actually can recognize the singer's voice or not. Because like, I think I'd be bad at it.
I've never seen Masked Singer. I used to watch, what the hell? What's the show that Kelly Clarkson won? Like the main one.
American Idol.
American Idol.
Thank you. I used to watch American Idol, like watched it every week. Mm-hmm. But then I auditioned for American Idol and having what? Like that. Yeah.
Lord drop.
Having that whole like experience of being there and seeing like, you know, because when you see it on TV, like they purposely pick bad people for the, you know, the drama of it, but being there and like seeing them purposely pick the bad people, it just made it really hard to want to continue. Yeah. I don't really watch reality TV. Honestly, I have been on this thing this past year where I haven't really watched TV. And if I do watch it, it's reruns of like Big Bang Theory and Parks and Rec because I've read 85 books already this year. See that back there? 85
I don't
books.
Literally have no idea how you do this. This is impossible.
I'm on a summer reading slump right now. I haven't read or wrote. I didn't know. Backtrack. I finished a short story yesterday.
Oh, congratulations.
It's the first thing I've completed beginning to end in a year. I'm really fucking proud of myself because I haven't been. April will tell you, I have been on the struggle bus with my writing lately. So, and it's pissing her off. So,
that is accurate.
I keep quitting projects because the characters.
I don't mind you having a bunch of works in progress. What it was you sent me two chapters of what was promising to be a steamy romance novel.
Oh. I really should get back
to
that.
And then you fucking quit it. You were like, eh.
So
I don't need to do that.
It's a legal drama between a paralegal and a lawyer, and they drop a contract about when they can and can't date, but they didn't meet at work. They met online, and it's like how they navigate that. And
yeah, that sounds really good. I can see why we're mad about not finishing this.
Thank you. Two chapters, and I was like, yes, give me more. And she was like, nah, I don't feel like it.
Well, the space reality show left me too, so I don't want to talk about the summer.
Uh-oh, okay.
Okay, I have no words for that. Okay, so
I cried over at April, and you know I don't cry a lot.
Well, I can imagine you did because you've been on that project for a while. All right, so yeah. Christy,
yes,
back to you.
Hi,
yeah, our guest. Enough about us. Our no
thanks, guest. Thanks for coming on our podcast.
Something real.
So this is the book we're actually talking about this week, which is Dungeons and Drama, but there is a sequel in this world, Dating and Dragons. But mm-hmm. I was wondering if you could give our listeners a synopsis of Dungeons and Drama.
Yes. Well, I'll do my best.
That pink cover.
Okay. I know. It's very beautiful. Yes. Very lucky for that cover. So Dungeons and Drama, YA romance. So we are following Riley. Riley is a huge musical theater lover, Broadway lover. Mm. At the beginning of the book, she gets in trouble with her parents. And so as a consequence of that, she has to start working at her dad's gaming store. And that's mm-hmm. a bit of a problem for her for multiple reasons. Number mm-hmm. one, she doesn't really care about gaming and doesn't like it or know much about it. She doesn't like the people who are hanging out there, including some kind of gaming guys, D&D guys, including Nathan, who's one of the employees. And she also doesn't get along really very much with her dad. Her mom and dad are divorced, and they don't have a really great relationship. And then beyond all of that, she also already has her hands full because she's trying to bring back the High School Musical that has gotten canceled because of a lack of interest. So she is very annoyed by this turn of events. And then mm-hmm. to make matters even worse, her ex, her very annoying ex-boyfriend, comes in and she thoroughly mm-hmm. embarrasses herself in front of him. Mm-hmm. And so she's mm-hmm. trying to figure out how is she going to make this work. So she comes up with a scheme that she's going to have Nathan flirt with her in front of the ex-boyfriend to prove
as
to him.
Do. Perfect.
Perfect. We love a fake dating. So that's going to, you know, kind of take care of that and make sure that he knows that she's totally over him. And then in exchange,
obviously,
she'll flirt with him, with Nathan, to make sure that his person that he has a crush on kind of takes an interest in him. But as we know from fake dating, things kind of go awry. Part of that is that she has to join the D&D group. And as she kind of gets more into that, she realizes that she actually likes D&D. And maybe possibly she likes Nathan a little bit too. So that's kind of the general setup of the book.
I mean, how could you pass him up? He's wearing elf ears in the cover, on the cover.
My younger listeners, if you do by chance slip in here, I want to warn you guys, not all D&D groups are keen on singers.
Yeah, that's fair.
I learned that the hard way a time or two.
I had to put some singing in there. She can't be Riley.
No, absolutely. As someone that I related to this character hard. I'm just saying, not all nerds appreciate a good tune.
That's very true.
So, Christy, you know the movie, I'm just assuming you do because you're like the same generation as us, but do you know the movie Bring It On? The original one with Kirsten Dunst.
Love it much.
I kept picturing Riley.
That's exactly who it was! That's exactly who I thought of!
I kept picturing Riley's ex-boyfriend as Torrance, was that her name?
Torrance, yes.
Her ex-boyfriend, where she's
my God, yes.
That was him to me.
That's perfect. You know, I will say I'm not a particularly visual person, so I have these vague ideas in my mind, and I'm always horrible at, like, you know, kind of fake casting my movies when people ask me, like, who would you cast? I'm like, I don't know. But you saying that, I'm like, oh my gosh, yes, that's totally who that actually would be.
She ambiguously queer, possibly will come out when he's older. Also very sure of himself.
I love that. Riley was a young Kristen Bell for me. Like, I just got those vibes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I need to watch Bring It On in general. That was I was obsessed with that movie when I was young. So
that's a great movie. I have seen all of the Bring It Ons. Don't do that. Why? Mm, they're all pointless. The first one's good though.
As the community cheerleader, we don't need that many.
Right. That's very fair. I never watched anything but the first one.
You know what? Instead of counting how many times you sing this season, we should count how many times you mentioned that you used to be a cheerleader.
Oh.
Or when I'm in the Coast Guard, or how many times I've been in the Coast Guard or a Coast Guard story.
Yeah.
I want to hear all the stories, but I guess we don't have time for that.
Well, you have my cell phone number. Just text me.
You're our new best friend. It's fine. All right. So we've talked about your inspiration for Dungeons and Drama, and it's really fascinating. So I was hoping that maybe you could share it with our audience now in case they didn't catch the lives from Columbus. What was the inspiration?
Absolutely. Okay. So, well, first off, whenever I think about my YA books, I always kind of in the back of my mind, I have these things, these general topics I want to write. So I'll say to myself, someday I want to write like a theater book, a musical theater book. And then I always had in my mind, someday I want to write a D&D book. And yeah. The reason why I wanted to write a D&D book is that that is, as we said in the bio, that is how I met my husband and also a lot of my other friends. It was sophomore year of high school. Me and my best friend started sitting with a group of guys. I went to homecoming with one of them. We were trying, like, kind of starting to get to know each other a little bit more. And they invited me to their house to start playing D&D. And I guess the rest is history. So still best friends with my friend. She married.
Love that.
Well, technically, she married the guy that I went to homecoming with. So there's always, whenever I say this story, I'm like, and now you know why I write YA romance, because I just feel like there's lots
drama.
Of drama and like. Fun.
Okay, but it's also growing up in a small town in Ohio, and it just gets oddly incestuous after a while between friend groups. We've all been there. I got
There's only so many people, right? So yeah, right. We're all still hanging out together and everything. So that I always wanted to write something that was like, because like to me, D&D, and I know this is not true for everybody, but for me, D&D and like teen romance, they're just like intertwined. So I just always had this feeling that I wanted to write a book like that. And then I never knew what to do with it until I was like, wait, what if I combined my ideas of the D&D and the musical theater together, and that's like where it really started to come together. So that was kind of the beginning, like inspiration for it.
And what I loved is you told us, like, you were like, oh, I'm sure this has already been written, and we're totally shocked that it hadn't been. And I am too, because you're right. I feel like theater, musical theater in general, like any of that, it goes very easily into D&D because you're role-playing. Like, you're role-playing.
Absolutely.
Well, I love you had this magical experience. My D&D group were four dudes and me. So
that's honestly what it's like a lot of times.
My one and only D&D experience was my husband trying to teach me how to play, because he DM'd for his coast. Like, they would literally be underway in the Coast Guard and it would be, they were on, what is it called?
You have to pass the time somehow.
What is it called when you're
underway?
Underway, but like, what's the time that you have that you can do things that aren't work? It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. You're saying your downtime.
He would be underway, and they would be playing Dungeons and Dragons, and also they played Magic the Gathering. And like, Tom has cards now that are like we have one that's worth $1,600, and it went to sea. Like, this card has been to sea. I'm like, why did you take your cards to sea? He's like, I didn't know they were worth anything back then.
I know,
dude. But my one and only time playing, I spent the whole day making my character. The whole motherfucking day. I had a character that was like a halfling of type. And she cared so much about animals and creatures. And she loved, you know, creatures and animals and very me. I died on my first move. My first roll, I died. And I was like, no, I'm done. I'm never playing this again.
Welcome to D&D. Oh, no, I knew a guy who was packing his sea bag. And at the bottom was one of those thick card binders full of Pokemon cards.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
That was going
now that I can get behind. I do love me some Pokemon.
It was like OG, our generation Pokemon cards, right? Like, nobody thought it was cool. But no, my D&D group was four dudes I was friends with in middle school when I was still a tomboy and didn't have boobs. And then when I had boobs, I wasn't allowed to tell anybody I was still in the D&D group, because then other people would want to come to see the girl in the D&D group.
My son,
you know,
my son has a D&D group with his, he's one of four kids in this group. And my husband and one of the other dads, they run it for the kids. My husband DMs and the other dad fills in too. And there's one girl. So it's three boys and a girl. And right now, none of them are interested in dating, or they don't. I mean, my son says, I'm not gay. Like, he says that, you know, I like girls, but I just am not interested in girls right now. But I feel so bad. I feel so bad for the one girl when they do, those hormones do kick in, because they're all going to middle school next year. And she's going to be the object of all three of their desire, because she's
not
going to
give a shit at all. She's not going to give a shit. And she's not going to give a shit at all. She's not going to care.
So back to this book.
Sure.
Dungeons and Drama is told, from Riley's point of view. And how did you find Riley's voice?
It's such a long process for me. I wish I could say that it was easy. And I feel like when I write my first drafts, they're always very flat. And I have, and I always, well, if you ever talk to my friends and family, they're so like, they roll their eyes at me because I'm like, this is the worst book ever. And it's never going to get better. And blah, 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 blah. And they're like, Christy, you say this every time. And I'm like, I know, but the other times I was making it up, and this time it's real and it's so hard. So,
this time
it took me a long
terrible.
Time. Right. This is the time.
I need
where
it this
I'm
time.
Right.
This is the time the town's gonna stone me and I'm never gonna be allowed to write again.
Exactly. But you know, you keep on, you persevere. I will say, relative maybe to some of my other characters, Riley did come a little bit like quicker to me because she had such a vibrant personality, and even she's not like me. So I didn't wear the bright clothes. I was in musical theater, but I was never in the speaking roles. She just has so much life and extroversion that I don't have, but that was fun to kind of think about that. And because I knew how strong she was and that she wasn't going to put up with anybody's shit, like it was just fun to get to write her, and then like with her and Nathan together and their tension, that started to come a little bit quicker. So it took me a little bit of time, but I really had such a great time writing Riley.
I feel like I relate a lot to Riley in the very loud colors and clothes and things like that, because I'm a children's librarian.
So I
that's what I do. Like every day it's like rainbow socks and tutus and pigtails. I actually posted on Facebook at 43. I should not have this problem, but my pigtails were too tight this week and I got a headache.
I love that. That's the best problem to have.
It's not normal for my age, but yeah, so I related to her in that way. And listen, I'm always gonna fall for a nerdy dude. That's what I married. That's what I married completely. I mean, and I have a grumpy sunshine marriage too. Like, that's my favorite trope for a reason, because my husband is so grumpy and I am not.
To be fair, I have met him and I did not think that he was grumpy. He was very nice, but
he was so on his like totally best behavior in Columbus.
I don't know who that variation of Tom. I love you, Tom, but I don't know who that variation of you was, dude.
We've been together for 16 years and married for 15 of them. I've never seen him extrovert like that. I was like, where
he passed out 90% of our flyers and our stickers.
Yes, he was. He was out there doing stuff.
Yeah. I think a lot of that has to do with, like, he's just really proud of us. You know what I mean?
That's so
like,
sweet. That's the best.
It is really sweet.
So
he's supportive and shit.
So with Riley, I relate to her on a personal level because the act first, consequences later.
Right.
100% Molly Biggs at that age.
That's ADHD though.
That's 100% Molly Biggs at that age. Mm-hmm. That whole like, I'm the only person in the world, not paying attention to other people, didn't realize others were around me.
Yeah.
Forgetting that people like that is 100% like, I was a little bit self-centered like that too. I feel like that's a really common thing for teen girls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And realizing that we're not the center of the universe is how you become more adult.
Yes.
And it takes a long time for that to build and mature out of children.
Yes.
And not all kids have that, but you can see that in here with Riley.
And that is one of the things I really liked about this book, because I feel like sometimes YA books, the way that the teenagers are written, are not authentic to teenagers. I felt like this was a real teen doing real teen stuff. And I think I told you this in Columbus. I didn't always like Riley. Like, I still rooted for her and Nathan, but I didn't always like her. And Molly and I actually had a discussion about this separately, because we have different views on the relationship and the dynamics between her and her father. And I think, like, even though I didn't always like her, she is 100% somebody I knew in high school. She is 100% somebody who's walking the halls of a high school right now. And I'm just in my 40s and like, I don't always want to deal with that. But but she is very authentically a teenager. So if you are looking for a YA book that is true to the teens, this is it. It 100% is. 100%. Agreed.
I've had a lot of people say similar things to me or tag me and things like that, and sometimes say things that are similar, like, this was really authentically a teen book, and this made me feel things because I wasn't sure if I wanted to go back to those times. And I take that as a huge compliment, because I feel like that is what I'm trying to do, is I want to try to make authentic characters. So thank you for saying that.
I told you this too. I couldn't not picture the high school that I went to, the high school where we had the homecoming in the same cafeteria, and that the music wing of the high school. Like, that is what I pictured the whole time I was reading. It was it was very easy to imagine it.
I too was placing myself home.
Oh yeah,
especially when they're driving around, right?
Yeah,
that is because I grew up in upstate New York.
What else are you gonna do?
We drove around.
Right.
We listened to music in our car, and we drove around on back roads.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's what we did. Yep.
Yeah.
And then my husband and I were amazing.
We were 16 at the time, so we were not married, but my husband and I were listening to Offspring and zooming around and probably driving too fast and passing on roads you shouldn't be passing because you don't, it's not whatever, but that's part of it. So I was just trying to pull like all of like my memories and my just the vibes of that time of my life, and I'm glad that it was like, it feels authentic to people.
It is,
because when I read like John Green, those aren't teenagers. What kind of teenagers are those?
Oh, wait.
And I love John Green. Love John Green, but every one of his are precocious, not normal teenagers.
Very precocious, yes.
Right. We mentioned John Green. We also have to mention tuberculosis.
Oh, everything is tuberculosis.
Everything is tuberculosis.
I'm so fucking tired of tuberculosis, John!
I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you. I read the book. It was good. It's right there behind me.
It's not about the book. It's I see a video come up and I'm scrolling and I see a video come up and John Green starts talking and he stopped fucking talking about tuberculosis for the first time in forever. And then 10 minutes in this goddamn video, what is he talking about? Tuberculosis.
To be fair, I saw a video of his recently where he was talking about Dr. Pepper. So he does have a variety of views. It's just Dr. Pepper.
But he probably let it. Yeah.
I'm sorry, but only somebody with OCD could write about how Taylor Swift relates to tuberculosis.
Oh, this is interesting. Okay, I have to read this book.
And the only reason he doesn't relate Dr. Pepper to tuberculosis is because they're his special interests, because he's autistic. He's not going to cross them.
He tried to convince Dr. Pepper to not sponsor him, but to be sponsors of humanity. Oh. And essentially, they were going to be marketing the moon and the perspective of the moon looking at humanity. And Dr. Pepper never called him back after that.
I could maybe see where there's a disconnect there. I'd have to get more context, but...
Oh, John.
I don't know. All right, so Riley is living a complicated, drama-filled teenage life. She is being forced to work at her father's store as punishment for taking her mom's car without permission so she and her best friend, Hoshika, can see Waitress live on stage,
fair. I've seen Waitress. It's fucking bomb.
It's pretty good.
But by the way, it's on HBO Max.
Okay, but this creates a sort of fish out of water experience for her. So can you talk about the coming of age growth that happens in this book?
Yes. Well, you know, sometimes I think about kind of where do I want my characters to end up at the end of the book, and then what's kind of happening with them at the beginning. So, I mean, for Riley, I knew she was going to be having struggles on a couple of different levels. You know, as we talked about, she is very focused on one thing in life. She just cares about her musicals. So I kind of wanted to see her be able to branch out in terms of her interests and branch out in terms of her friends and realize that there is kind of more to life than musicals, although we don't want to give up on it, but also, you know, we can see other things. And I want her to also be able to kind of reconnect with her dad. So that was what a lot of that was kind of where is she going to be at the beginning? And then I also, to be honest, was kind of thinking, well, I need her to go to her dad's store and she doesn't want to. She's going to be forced to it. So what can I make her do at the beginning of the novel that would be, I guess, bad enough that would make that happen, but also not so bad that, like, she's going to jail or I don't know, whatever. Going to walk the line. So,
there's a line. There's a line of bad.
I mean, there's a line. Which I don't know. I mean, I thought that I did okay, but I did have some 12-year-olds who were like, I do not like Riley. She broke all the rules and she's, and I was like, oh shoot. Okay.
Because
I really
they're
like
12. I come know. Back in 4 years.
It was so cute. They were like, they still read it. They liked it. They were like,
well, it depends. Sweet summer child. Are they on the spectrum? Because my spectrum rule following daughters would be pissed that this girl stole a car.
Some of them were pissed. Yes. Yeah. Some of them were pissed. Like, and I was like, oh shoot. Okay.
But like, I know a lot of girls that steal cars now. So
she did not consider it stealing. She was just borrowing the car.
Honestly, like it feels very, very the impulsivity of teenagers. And since you teach psychology, I'm going to be saying something that's like dumb because it's me doing this third party. But there was a book. It's been like 20 years since this book is out. I don't even know if it's still in print or if it's been updated, but there's a book like, called Is My Teenager Crazy?
Yes, I remember this book.
And they studied the brain scans, CT, MRI, whichever looks at your brain, CT, I think. They studied the brain scans of teenagers and compared it to the brain scans of adults with schizophrenia. Mm. And they were very similar. They do not have impulse control. Prefrontal cortex is not fully developed yet.
Yes.
So hell yeah, you're going to steal your your mom's car and drive and go see Waitress because that's an opportunity that you wanted. You are going to figure out a way to do it. It Absolutely. Made sense to me.
It was stupid, the stupid shit that I did in high school. Yes.
I have a few Molly stories from that time frame that would make that math make sense. But we're not sharing those on pod.
I mean, it's just the way teenagers are. They spend a lot of money.
It was very important.
Yeah.
My 12-year-old was not a thing.
Right. My 12-year-old got mad that somebody stole his something on Minecraft. And so he killed his friend's Minecraft dogs.
Oh, no. I'm like,
and it was a whole thing where he was like, I don't know why they're mad at me. He's also autistic. He's like, I don't know why they're mad at me. And I was like, maybe we don't kill our friend's dogs. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Feels like a bad idea.
Maybe we don't kill our friend's dogs. Period. And other things we say on Book Besties.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Gosh.
What is this episode? All right. Nathan is the MMC love interest in this book. Riley and Nathan begin fake dating. Which I love a fake dating.
I love
fake they begin dating. A fake dating to make their actual love interests jealous. I'm here for fake dating always. What do you like about this trope, Christy?
I've always wanted to do a fake dating trope, but I wanted to have like a reason. Not that like I have to have a reason, but I wanted it to like make sense for the plot. And once I started thinking about like, wait, so musical theater is acting. D&D is role-playing, which might as well be acting. And then I'm going to do the trope where they have to act together. And then they're both good actors. So then it's like, well, wait, are you faking? Like, are you, you're good enough that maybe this is. So like, as soon as I figured that out, I was like, oh my God, it has to be fake dating. And then also I love fake dating because number one, there's tension, but there's also like the possibility for humor where it's like, you can kind of put them into these like uncomfortable positions and like, what are they going to do? And so I had such a good time with that. Like, I'd love to get back and do another fake dating, but I don't want to do it again until I have like another, like, you know, plot where I'm like, oh, it has to be fake dating, but
it has to be organic. I hate when authors, if an author shoves fake dating in and it's not necessary and there's no chemistry and they don't write the chemistry and it's just two pieces of sandpaper running against each other, it doesn't make the trope work.
Yeah.
It has to have that slight sexual tension. It has to have that.
They're teens.
Will they, won't they, right?
So kissing.
There's
tension.
Always
there's romantic tension. There's, you know, they might
romantic
not
romantic tension.
Okay. Forgive me.
It's all good. But no, I totally agree.
As the author.
I love fake dating, do not like fake marriage. That's too much of a commitment.
Yeah.
I marriage of convenience though.
I do like marriage of convenience. Wait, so is marriage of convenience different from fake marriage?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
It's not always the same. So marriage of convenience can be like, I have to marry this person in order to fulfill the will or whatever.
Yes. Yeah.
But fake marriage can just be like, I need to get back at my ex-wife.
Got it. I agree with that then. I think I haven't read any fake marriage ones. I've read Marriage of Convenience, but now that you're specifying that, I'm like, wait, I don't think I've ever read one of those.
I don't know, because like I would consider The Wall of Winnipeg to be fake marriage,
not yeah. marriage of convenience, but they got married because his visa was up. And so he could stay. But to me, that wasn't marriage of convenience. That was fake marriage. And they also didn't have any chemistry. That's not a very good book. Don't read it.
Final Offer, not Final Offer.
Final Offer was, the second one in the Dreamland.
You know what I'm saying? Right, right.
Yeah, that was.
That's a good one. That's good.
Yeah.
It the Dreamland Billionaires.
Yeah.
So I do Riley and Nathan. Oh, I do too. Riley and Nathan have a very opposites attract relationship that reminds me of Leonard and Penny from The Big Bang Theory. Why should Reuters? Nope, that's not what.
Our babies will be smart and beautiful.
And they were. Why should readers root for them to have their happily ever after or happily ever in high school?
Yeah. In my opinion, it's happily ever after, but that's just because I married my high school sweetheart. So I'm like, to me, it can work out. But
children, the exception, not the rule.
Right. That's very the fair. Yes.
Not the rule.
Except two of my best friends married their high school sweetheart. One of my best friends, who is Molly, married somebody she went to high school with.
Matt and I are in the same picture from our eighth grade prom, and we didn't even remember. Neither of us remembered being the other was in the picture until we were digging through our shit and showing each other stuff from high school.
So my point is
adorable.
My four closest friends, three of them married people that were from high school. So it's not normally the rule, but.
It's weird. And as a side note, this is not what you were asking me about, but I will just say that I've talked to multiple YA romance authors who are also married to their high school sweethearts. So I think there may be something about, like, when we didn't have incredibly traumatic romantic relationships in high school, we're willing to write about them as authors.
I had trauma. Don't worry. So
I need the data on that. My librarian brain is like, there's some stats out there.
The neurons are firing.
You need to start doing a little poll with everybody that you bring in just to kind of get an idea about this. So I don't know. Yeah. But anyway, you know, and as a side note, also Leonard and Penny, I did watch Big Bang Theory. Love that show. No one's going to believe me when I say this, but they were not, I wasn't thinking about them when I wrote it, but now it's like, obviously them, because there's the blonde girl and there's the boy with the dark hair and glasses. I don't know, man.
Nathan's taller. It's fine.
That's true. He might be a little cuter than Leonard too. But
well, I think it's on my brain because that's my current like show when I am not reading. I've been watching that. So that's where my brain is.
I just finished
it.
Totally, yeah. The girls and I just finished the last season of Young Sheldon, and then we blew through Big Bang together. So.
Wow. That's a lot of seasons too to blow through. Yeah.
We just leave the TV on and do shit.
Yeah. We used to do that too. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, of course I'm biased because I love Riley and Nathan. They're sweet little babies together. But I don't know. To me, I just feel like one of the things that I always try to write and that I love about romance is when it's not about changing for the other person, but it's like when you're with that person, they bring out the best version of you. And so that's what I see in Riley and Nathan is, you know, they both start like, he's also a little bit, I don't know about self-centered, but he's very like focused on his things. He's very close-minded. And so as they get together, you know, and as they kind of become friends, they really open each other up. And I think they become, again, just better versions of themselves. So of course I would root for them to stay together because I feel like they have a very non-toxic, like, you know, just sweet, kind relationship together.
Yeah. And I think Nathan softens her a lot.
Yeah.
I've got to get this done. We've got to make this work. And Nathan is kind of like, girl, let's just, you know.
Let's go take a car ride. Let's
roll some dice. It'll be fine.
Let's do some role playing with some elves.
Right. I think that's necessary. Like, he really... Yeah. He really softened her and she made him like man up. Like, I don't really love that term, but she made him man up. Like, if you really like somebody, you need to go for it. Like, you know,
I think
they were good for each other.
I think her being there really showed him that you don't have to force yourself onto someone to be in a relationship with them. Right.
Yeah. Right.
A relationship can be organic. You don't have to beg someone to love you. If you are trying and listening at Molly kiddos, if you are begging someone to love you, they're not your person.
Nope. They're not your person.
And Nathan was the other girl. I cannot think of her name off the top of my head. The other girl that he was interested.
No.
That's something I should know, isn't it? I've read a few books in between these.
Perhaps you could know. It's okay. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. My point is, he was buying her stuff. Like, she was buying him. She knew that he had, you know, feelings, and she was using him. And I think Riley did a good job, like, calling him out on that. Like, this is not how this works. Like, you don't need to do this.
Do you know who I was picturing for her, by the way? The Russian roommate from New Girl.
No.
You know, Mickey Mouse. You know, Mickey Mouse.
No, she
because she's mean and, like, demanding, and I don't know. No.
She
I don't know why.
Sophia. Sorry, it's Sophia. It took me that long.
I kept picturing the movie version of Scott Pilgrim.
Oh, yeah.
The girl. Yeah. And she had the black hair that, like, with the, you know, you have to fight my seven exes. That's who I kept picturing for her.
Yeah, boy, that's been a long time since I saw that. But I could, I could see that. Yeah.
Too much pop culture today.
I know. It's forever too much, though.
Listen, every time we film on a Friday after I've worked, it's
hard. You're going to get it. It's fine. We're raining it.
I don't know what to say. All right. In chapter 10, Riley and Nathan have a conversation about consent. And while it isn't like the traditional boyfriend-girlfriend conversation, it gives a great structure to YA readers to understand the respect from consent. Are there any other life lessons that you kind of, like, snuck into the pages here?
Oh, I don't, you know, I do want, well, let me start by saying that I know that there's a wide range of ages that are going to read these books. So yes, I have people, like, I have some fans who are in their 60s who write me and tell me how much they love it. And I know I have 12-year-olds and who knows, maybe even some kids that are younger that picked it up, you know, when, you know, whatever. So I am always cognizant of that, but I'm also thinking about the fact that I don't want it to feel like a lesson. So I think sometimes if I'm trying to put, I don't really want to try to put lessons in. I guess I kind of hope that it'll come out organically. So, I mean, I certainly,
the only reason I wrote that question is because I've been having these conversations with my girls, and it was nice to see this conversation organically on the page. Right. He didn't just be like, oh, you know, like they talked about it. It wasn't a thing that they just glossed over it. And that's why I brought that up.
Well, and the reason why, I didn't go into it thinking I need to have a conversation about this. What happened is I was just writing the scene. I was thinking about what's the trajectory of this plot going to be. And I wanted to put them in these scenarios where she, like, maybe the ex-boyfriends come up and Nathan's going to kind of swoop in and he's going to put on this fake boyfriend role and he's going to touch her. He's going to put his arm around her. And I was like, well, how does he know that that's okay? And how would she, like, in real life, like, I don't know if it's cool for guys to just come up and start doing stuff and we haven't talked about it. And I didn't want that to be what was in the book. And I didn't want Nathan to be this, to be shown as this amazing romantic hero if he's also doing those kinds of things. So I was I think
his personality,
we need to like have, and yes, and then hopefully it's part of his personality where it doesn't seem completely fake, but he's kind of like, wait, how is this going to work? And she's like, how is this going to work? And they just have a conversation about it, which, like you said, I think having just a genuine, just spur of the moment conversation is oftentimes the way to do it. So again, I wasn't trying to put in like a lesson, but I am thinking about like the toxicity of some relationships and that there's a time and place for that in books, like, and I, you know, a dark romance, but for a YA, I just, you know, I wanted it to be a little different, which doesn't really answer your question, 'cause you were also asking about other lessons. And
no,
I guess,
but I do feel like you answered the question because you were like,
you did.
You were saying you don't explicitly put it in there. And I think for it, in the context of this particular one, Christy, you and I are raising boys. And there's a conversation that we have with boys.
100%.
Because women already know. Yep. Like, the statistics of how young women are hit on, like, it's disgusting. Yeah.
It's horrible.
And so we're raising boys and we're trying to teach them, like, this is how this conversation needs to go. And so I appreciate it from that point of view. You know,
those are conversations we're also having in our house and we'll continue to have in different, you know, more detailed conversations as time goes on, because he's still a little young. But
as we age and raise we have to continue.
We have to keep having the conversations. Yeah. Absolutely.
When they,
but that when, was, yeah.
when my oldest, who's 12 now, when he was in third grade and they first started having like the, you know, the talks puberty in school, talks. Which is it's very minor in third grade here. But my husband said to him, look, girls' bodies are going to change. You can notice, but you can't comment on it. And I was like, that is like, you know, I was like, that's really good. Like, he's obviously going to notice, but he's an autistic boy who doesn't have a filter. So what happened to your chest? Like, why does it look like that?
Right.
That would be totally something that he would say and not realize why that's not okay.
He wouldn't mean it cruelly.
He wouldn't. Not. He would just be so something fucking oblivious.
No. There's a lot of boys out there who I think are sometimes a little bit like that. So
yeah,
I married him.
Me too. Molly and I had a mutual friend that's not our friend anymore because we're the only ones that survived the friend group who hit on my husband right in front of me and in front of her husband.
What the hell?
Yes. Oh, no, this gets worse. This gets worse. My husband and this woman's husband look similar. And
it's not that friend. It's a different friend.
Oh, there's so many bad friends.
Oh, that's why we're not friends with him anymore. But she hit on my husband in front of me,
everyone,
and with her husband there. And we didn't know at the time, but she and her husband were on the outs.
Got it. Okay.
And I was like, they are. It's a whole thing. I was like, I was like, Tom, I cannot believe that she just did that and you didn't say anything. He's like, what are you talking about? Like, he didn't even.
Do you know how many
men... that's sweet from his perspective, but oh my gosh, I'm sorry. That is the worst.
Do you know how many men have hit on Matthew in front of me and my children? And
men, does not mind you, she said men.
Hit I did on hear her that.
Yeah. You gotta stop putting him in Paisley shirts, Molly.
It wasn't even the Paisley shirt. We took him. Okay, the most recent one was Ren Faire. Him and Liv were in line for like this maze, right? And he and this dude started talking because this dude had like a veteran thing on. And Matt's like, yeah, it was a Marine, you know? And Liv comes back and goes, this Navy guy was hitting on Dad. and Matt goes, what? And she goes, he was flirting with you the whole time. And he goes, it must have been my, and Matt goes, it must have been my kilt. But he didn't do it, but he doesn't do accents well. So it was like, it must have been my kilt.
All right, back to the book. In addition to the main relationship plot, there's a subplot where Riley is trying to save the High School Musical. Mm. We've already talked about this. You were a musical teen. So what's your favorite musical?
This is such a mean question and so hard. I can't give just one.
Current top number one.
Okay, give us a few favorites then.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for making it a little bit easier on me. All right, well, because I have different levels. Thank you, April, for being nice. All right, different variations. So, like, of all the musicals that we did in high school, I think my favorite, which is I don't think most people's favorite, but we did Hello, Dolly my senior year. And I just really, Barbara Streisand was in the movie version of that. Yeah. And I just loved, you know, so I had a great time with that. So I always have loved that one. I feel like, you know, I can't talk about musical theater and not talk about Wicked. It is a beloved one. I was just at a 14-year-old's birthday party and everything was pink and green and it's just like her whole personality right now. And I was like seeing Riley and her and I was like, oh, I wish I could see Riley watching Wicked for the first time. She would just freak out. I mean obviously
I live with the 14-year-old theater kid. You don't want to know.
No, that's fair. That's okay. Yeah. It might be too much. It gets to be a lot. Yeah. And then I'm just going to do one off Broadway one that people won't know about, but it's called The 20 Sided Tavern. And it is a.
Yeah! I do know that one.
I want to go so damn bad.
Molly, so that's where Emma Berry went there in the spring and was telling me about
it. Oh, I'm so jealous.
It's on tour now.
Emma Berry went to New York City. Emma Berry's a friend of mine, but she's a romance author and she's a friend of mine. Like we live like 15 minutes from each other.
That's awesome.
So she's really great.
Oh no, I wanted to go. It was here in DC, but
didn't work
out. Life is expensive right now.
It is very expensive. Yeah. It's hard to do it. Yeah. I was very lucky. And they were very, I don't know if I already told you guys the story in Columbus, but I will briefly say that I went there when Dungeons and Drama came out and I had my little book and they, because it's off Broadway, it's like a really different experience. So like there's three like adventurers and they walk through the audience and just chat with you. And so I was like, hi, sorry. I wrote this book and blah, blah, blah. And they were like, oh my God. And they like were very nice and took pictures and were excited about it. So I have a soft spot in my heart for them, but they were very, very sweet. Awesome. It's like D&D and improv and it's very fun. So yeah.
That's awesome. So I totally get the, I can't pick a favorite musical because I will say if I had to pick my favorite musical, it's probably Wicked. But everybody says, oh, when Wicked's your favorite musical, you're not really a musical fan.
I'm scared to say that.
Which is such bullshit, because it really is the best. Like, I don't know what to say.
My favorite's Rent, and everybody says that's cliche, right? Yeah. As soon as somebody goes, my favorite,
like, but I love Rent. I love Rent.
Rent's the reason I fell in love with musical theater.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And also one of my favorites is Sweeney Todd, just because I really like the darkness of it.
Sure.
And yes, I love Hamilton, but it probably wouldn't even make my top five. It probably wouldn't. It's great, but like, there's so many other things that I like.
Huh? Well, now that you guys are saying this, I'll just briefly tell you the story, which is that when I was a child, I was given the soundtrack to Phantom of the Opera. I never saw the musical, but I listened to it so much that I had it memorized. And then just recently I got to see it for the first time and it was like being brought back to childhood. And I was like, oh my God. It's like the music that I love so much. But anyway.
Yeah. I'm actually not really a fan of Phantom. I know that.
Did you see they're doing an interactive Phantom theater in New York City right now?
I saw they're going to bring it back, but no, I did not see this.
Yeah, they're doing they're doing two interactive ones. I saw an interactive Grease one that's I think it was in Australia where it's like set up in like a real field day, like the end scene in Grease, and you go from place to place and it's the scene. But I guess the Phantom one is like, it is a full on interactive. You go from space to space in New York in this building and it's like in the basement with the Phantom, you're in the big auditorium, you're in like it's all of the I love that they're doing this.
Very controversial opinion that I have. I do not like the sound of music, which I know is like, how can you not like the sound of music? But
I did that.
I don't know if you've been to Book Besties, but that is for when we don't like shit. I can't believe we're friends.
It's fine. We don't have to be.
We're only 90s and in.
You're just going to be the book. You're not going to be Book Besties anymore. Just be book podcast.
Book podcast. Welcome to book. That's April. I hate her.
She doesn't like Sound of Music.
I don't know what to say.
Anyway, it's not my favorite, but I do like it.
It's a Christmas staple, man.
And I've never seen a live production of Into the Woods that I like. Every time I do like Into the Woods, but every time I see it put on, I'm like, what is this?
I'm going to lose my musical theater card, but I will admit that I've not seen it. I've not seen it live. So I know.
I think that's fair. My first teaching job was at a school for the visual and performing arts. And so we had a huge musical theater program and like the teachers of it had been on Broadway. Like it was a really big deal. Like if you were doing technical theater as like your major at that school, like the person who was teaching technical theater was designing sets for Disney World and for Busch Gardens. Like, I mean, it was very talented staff. It was incredible. I was just the journalism teacher. So it's just like, hey, I write.
We need writers.
Seriously, we need writers, guys.
but I've seen a lot of shows because of that. And when I say, oh, they were high school productions, people think high school production, which are not always great, but like we're talking about kids who like went on to Carnegie Mellon and went on to Juilliard. Like we're not talking about kids who like me who just was like a sock in Damn Yankees. Like, that's not what we're talking about. So Dungeons and Drama has received a lot of social media hype, but it isn't your first book. You've written a book about book for the Descendants book series, the Disney's Descendants book series, two other novels, which are Hot British Boyfriend and Hot Dutch Daydream, in addition to the sequel to Dungeons and Drama, which is called Dating and Dragons, and it's right here. The covers are very similar. I like how this is a blue one. Very good complementary. Where should readers start with your work? And what can you tell us about your other books?
Well, I mean, I can say lots of things about all of them. I mean, to some extent, I would hope that if you liked one, you'd like the other. I think that's certainly true for Dungeons and Drama and Dating and Dragons. They're not even companion novels. In my mind, they're in the same world, but it's two totally different, you know, sets of characters. So if there's one thing that you happen to love, if you happen to be a musical theater person, obviously start with that. If you like Critical Role and live streaming, maybe start with Dating and Dragons. I also just happen to love traveling. So my first couple of books were more travel romance, like study abroad romances. So if you really like a British boy, Hot British Boyfriend of always a winner, and then Hot Dutch Daydream is set in Amsterdam, and so that is another, each one of them obviously is a little piece of my heart, so but they're also all standalones. Well, you know, they're also little parts of my life, so there's, like, you know, little things about each one of them that I feel so connected to. But, you know, I guess if you had to start with one, I think, you know, we're here for a reason. So I feel like Dungeons and Drama is always a good place to start.
And if she said this one, do it.
And if you have a really little one, you can start with Descendants. It's a very different kind of book. It's more like an encyclopedia of characters. But that was a fun one to get to work on, too.
You're our second Disney writer, actually.
Oh, fun. Yeah. Okay, nice.
Beth Radis is also a Disney writer.
She wrote some of the Star Wars books, and she told us that she was mostly a pantser until she started writing for them, and then they were like, no, you have to tell us what you're writing.
That's so intimidating to write for Star Wars or like one of those big IPs. I mean, I know Descendants is big, but I was just doing an encyclopedia of stuff, so it was
I still would be scared to write for the mouse, man.
Yeah. Oh yeah. But that's, it was cool getting the contract and seeing Disney, and I was like, look at this.
Hell yeah.
Absolutely. I would be taking pictures and send it to everybody. I'm like, oh, shit.
So I put a note to myself here so I wouldn't forget, but Hot Dutch Daydream was a Junior Library Guild selection, which if you're a librarian, you know what a big deal that is. That's a big deal. And Hot British Boyfriend is being made into a movie? Is that?
Shut the fuck up, dude!
Well, movie or TV show. So I will, you know, I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about it, but let's just talk about it anyway. So
cut it out if you can.
Yeah. It's not like this is being listened to by anybody anyway.
I'm sure that it is, but I can't imagine it's a bad thing to hear, you know, the details of these things. So it's, you know, Hollywood's such a long process, but it's the company that they produced To All the Girls I Loved Before. So they are part of Paramount.
I love those.
So Jenny Han, of course, you know, very big, amazing people. So they first off, like, the way that it works is they kind of rent the rights for a little bit. And then if they want to, then they go and buy them outright. So they've now outright bought the rights. So what I've been told is that means that they have serious interest and they think they're going to have it be made. Having said that, there's been a lot of stuff in the news about it. So Paramount is trying to merge with Skydance. I honestly don't even really know, but basically until all of that gets merged and then the fallout of that happens, they're not going to do much more with it. So I think they have a script, they have ideas, but they're going to wait. So I don't want to get people's hopes up too much. I would love for something to happen. We'll see what Hollywood does, but every part of it's been a joy so far. So
Sorry, go ahead, Molly.
If it does go through, you're welcome to come back and talk about it.
I would love to, absolutely.
Hell yeah. I can see this world of Dungeons and Drama, like that world being
This is a TV show, babe.
Yeah.
This is a TV show.
I have this vision of it, and I wouldn't be the one to write it, but almost like, I don't know, I like it, of it being a little bit like High School Musical, where it's like this, but then they also have like songs, and I don't know, man, like it just sounds so cute, and they could break out dancing. So
you do have Disney connections. You wrote the same
doing. Why are you hanging out with us?
Because you guys are cool.
I do feel like it would work as like a Disney Plus like special, like a Disney Plus series on there.
It's a Saturday night movie. It's a Disney Saturday night movie.
I think it would do it.
It's a Saturday night movie.
Fingers crossed. I want.
Yes.
All right. So you write YA exclusively now. Why is it important to you to write that genre? And would you ever consider writing a spicy D&D adult book?
Okay. So, I mean, the reason why I can already see the background of this question, but to start answer the first part of it, I love, like I said, I did fall in love with my high school boyfriend, so I do have a soft spot in my heart for that. But there's also something about writing YA that's like, they're at a time in their lives where there's so much optimism and possibility, and they're making all these choices. And I love that time of life and that like joy that, I mean, not to say that every teen is filled with joy, but I think sometimes when you get into adulthood, it's like, you know, there's bills and gas and, you know, a lot of bad boyfriends and relationships. It can be a little rough. I do love an adult romance, but there's just something that I really like about writing YA and then also writing about like the self-esteem issues and like the firsts of everything. It's, you know, so that's why I've been so drawn to it. I, you know, never say never in terms of writing adult romance. I'm not saying I'm not going to do it. I'm just, right now I'm contracted for YA romance. So that's kind of where my focus is at. But I appreciate your push adult spicy.
I just need you to write a novella that you just send to me.
Okay.
That's my email.
Okay. You know, that's all I need. Add something extra in all your free time.
Okay. No, I get a little spicy chapter in there and send it on.
But I do actually appreciate that this is clean YA. I do not think YA should have open door explicit content. Like, kissing is one thing, but when we start, and Fade to Black is a totally different thing, but with YA, I don't think it should be in there. And I'm not saying the teenagers aren't having sex. I'm not stupid. But but I just don't feel like that's where the writing should be. And I like that's here's the thing, and you kind of touched on this a little bit earlier when you were talking about how you have such a wide range of readers. YA needs to be broken down into subgenres. We need a junior high, middle school, young adult, and then we need an older, more mature young adult, because right now we have books like Chloe Walsh's series, what's it called? Binding 13 is the first one. We're actually going to cover it this season. Coming up. It's actually this month that we're covering it. That series is very, very dark. And in the trigger warnings specifically say that this should be read by more mature teenagers, 15 to 18. I feel like your books are accessible for the whole YA, you know, the whole YA umbrella, but there needs to be another, there needs to be another genre.
Right. Because YA, right? That is young YA. YA, old YA, because there's sex. New YA. You know what I mean?
Is there sex in
selection? In the selection, there is. There's sex in the selection.
There's like making out and groping, but they don't totally have sex.
There's hard, heavy petting.
Yes, there that is. Does happen.
Hard, heavy petting.
Yeah, that's true.
America definitely is about to get down if she could.
But he laughs at her because, anyway, that's a whole other episode. Go watch that episode or listen to that episode. We already did that one. We did that in the first season.
That's season one. Go back to selection. Anyways, but my point, but I'm supporting your point.
Yeah.
We have to have these variations.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
we have to be able to direct kids because they can't tell by this cover. Because this cover and this cover make these books look very similar.
Yeah. Right. I actually had a woman come in. Because I'm a librarian in a public library, I actually had a woman come in and ask me, why are all the books for kids right now on our new bookshelf? And I was like, what do you mean? And she's like, look at all these books that are for kids. And I was like, oh, ma'am.
Oh, honey. No.
I was like, no, ma'am. These might be cartoon covers, but they have very naughty adult content. Like, yes. It's not, those are not for kids. She was like, yeah. Oh, okay.
And knowing my parents, like, I have a lot of friends who are not in this community and don't do a lot of reading themselves. They don't know how to pick out things or what the differences is. And so, like, they can't really help their kids to navigate all of that. So it is
all right, April, we got to lobby the, what is it, the ALA? Is that who we bother about this?
And no, it's the publishing world. Like, ALA can make a space for, encourage libraries to make a space for it, but it's the publishing industry that's really going to drive that change.
Yeah.
And the change, was it you, Christy, that we were talking about new adult at Columbus, or was it?
I think we were.
New adult.
We had a conversation with EM too about new adult.
That might have been what it was, but we were talking. Whoever I was talking to, we were talking about how new adult kind of got roped into, like, it's just romance, right. And that's not really true either. Like, college is a different part of your life. Like, you have to be an adult, but you're not an adult. Like, you're not an adult. So absolutely. I don't know. You really wouldn't have to break these down in the adult fiction section, but I can tell you the people who are going to read James Patterson, they're seniors. And also, I hate James Patterson. but you can see the breakdown of, like, what people are reading. But then I run a romance book club at our library, and we read, we have somebody who is 79 years old, a 79-year-old man.
Yo, dude.
In my book club.
This.
Oh, I mean,
I don't even know his name, and I love him.
I know his name, but I'm not going to say it on pod. He's a whole thing. He's a whole vibe. But this was not one of the questions, so feel free to tell me we're not talking about that. But I wanted to kind of share, like, what Molly and I were talking about when it came to the relationship of Riley and her dad.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I hold Riley's mom responsible for that relationship being broken, and Molly was holding her dad responsible for that relationship being broken. And for me, and I think it's contextual because it's how we were raised. Like, I was raised in a family, my parents were divorced, and my mom very much made me feel like if I went to my dad's house, I was somehow hurting her. And so that's what I pictured with Riley's relationship, like, with her mom. Like, she felt like she needed to be with her mom. They have the things in common, and we're just going to separate from dad. Whereas Molly is coming from the perspective of, my mom encouraged it and my dad just didn't.
Oh no, so it was way worse. But that Barb never, as terrible as things were, never said a foul word. Mm-hmm. Today, she still doesn't say foul words. And I'm in my 40s. She still encourages me to reach out to him and check on him. And I don't.
Yeah.
So
go ahead. I was going to say, like, Christy, what is your take on this as the writer? Like, what did you think writing this?
Well, this is going to sound like I'm making it up just to make you both happy, but to me, it was a little bit of both. My parents are still married. So I didn't choose that as a self, I don't know, like an autobiographical kind of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I kind of saw it in two ways. Like, I mean, I felt like her dad was a little bit selfish in some of the choices that he made. He did, at least at one point in his life, kind of prioritize himself and, like, his dreams. And I think her mom and her both felt that. And they, because of that, they kind of bonded even closer. But then I think because of that, then it was like, I love mom and we're so happy and we're a little team and dad's over here and I don't really care about dad. And then dad's not doing a whole lot to help. But then when he tries to, because I think he does care and he does want to have a connection, but then he doesn't really know how to do that other than to connect with the stuff that he cares about. And he doesn't know how to make that bridge happen with Riley.
Yeah.
So I don't see either of them as being total villains, but I see that they both kind of have their own part to play in it. And hopefully there's some little bit of connection with even the divorced parents by the end of the book. But
That's totally a fair argument. And
that's a good assessment. I mean, it is your book, so you should be able to have your feels.
We're going to just allow you to have it.
I appreciate that. It's interesting to hear both of your perspectives and how what your background is, you know, informed how you felt about it.
Well,
and also we're reading it as adults, you know.
Right. Sure. But, well, and that's what I was going to say. Like, my view as a grown-up, it is a grown-up's responsibility to maintain the relationship with their child. If Riley doesn't have a relationship with her father, it's not Riley's fault. She is a child in this situation.
Also, the responsibility of both parents to
co-parent. Absolutely. Her mom should have absolutely kept her mouth fucking shut. Yeah. But it is not Riley's fault. Her and her dad don't spend time together.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they do technically spend time together, but they just don't really do anything together. Right. So, yeah. Like, she sees them.
They weren't bonding.
And even that just reinforces to her, it's like, when I'm with mom, I'm having so much fun. And when I'm with dad, we just sit around his apartment and watch TV.
Mom knows me. Mom loves me. Dad doesn't care. That's how that feels to Riley.
Yeah, exactly correct.
Yes, I get that vibe.
So we have gone way over time. So, what's next for you? No, it's on us. It's on us.
I apologize.
Mom will never apologize. I will apologize because I feel like we're not respecting your time. But what's next for you? Where can we find more? Where can people find more info for you?
Sure. Well, in terms of where to find me, I'm not on a ton of social media, but I am on Instagram, and that's where I will post, you know, stuff on my stories and my feed. So definitely look for all that information. I do have a website, so I, you know, do the basics of all those things and pre-order links and stuff like that on my website, ChristyBoyceAuthor.com. And then what's next for me?
We'll put it below.
Okay, thank you. It is a little... I want to be able to say more about it. It's not officially like been put out there, but I'm going to, you know, if you're here listening, then I appreciate you listening. So we'll say a little bit about it. I do have another D&D romance coming out. Very excited about it. The title has not been released and the cover hasn't been released. From what I know, it's coming out next May.
Watch the socials.
Watch socials. They do tend to move those around, but right now I'd say it's going to be May or probably earlier. And I will say that if Dungeons and Drama is my D&D and musical theater book, then this new book is my D&D and marching band book. So very excited to take those two worlds and put them together.
Yes!
The banders represent!
Woo! 4 years in the marching band! Woo!
I have very beloved memories of marching band.
Here we come!
It was like my favorite thing I did in high school. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes for that one.
So Forest Kids.
Yeah. So anything else you want to share with us before we wrap it up?
Oh, talk about your event coming up.
Oh, which one? I have multiple ones.
Any of them. I don't care.
Okay, well, I mean, I have some
that are happening. She's so popular, she's got multiple ones.
Well, there are some that are happening tomorrow, and I think that won't make sense to talk about right now.
But... I mean, like, that's in fair. The future.
Right.
Anything September-ish.
What the heck am I doing? I think I have a library event in November. Oh, woo! I'm doing a keynote, which I'm excited about. I'm going to be, so SCPWI is like a society for children's book writers and illustrators. Yeah. There's all the different regions. And when I was kind of up and coming, I would go to this conference every single year. And now they've asked me to come back and do the keynote for it. So it's like a very
full circle moment. That's so freaking awesome. Congratulations. That's really fucking cool.
Yeah, that'll be in the beginning of October. So that's like my thing I'm kind of prepping for and excited for. And my friends are going to come and watch me and I'm looking forward to it. So yeah.
You are so fancy and thank you for being here.
Yes.
Thank you for having me. This is so much fun. I'm very honored that you asked me for the first episode of season 9. So.
And you are a great guest. So thank you so much for doing this. Yay. It's been awesome.
We'll bother you.
I want to keep chatting with you.
All right, besties, this season of Book Besties is proudly sponsored by Carpe Librum.
The
one and only Carpe Librum, bookish things for bookish people. So keep checking our social media and listening all season long for special perks and merch that you can get using discount codes.
Did you know what I learned?
What?
They make one of the coolest freaking bookmarks on the market.
Yeah.
Did you know this?
They have a 13-step process that is like a propriety to them.
Oh, yeah. I've seen them on the knockoffs on Amazon. They fall apart. Oh,
I have some knockoffs and they dent your book. So, I haven't had a chance to check their bookmarks out yet, but I have four of their shirts. They're very comfy. They're all
size inclusive. I love their shirts.
They do not shrink. They're made at their home shop. They screen print by hand.
My favorite part of their shirts is it looks like I could get tetanus from the typewriter that they use to make the font.
There's definitely like a real
gritty and authentic feel to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that's what I want. Right. Like, yeah. I want to feel like an old man is going.
As a librarian,
because I'm a bookish person.
Right. We're both bookish people for sure. As a librarian, I wear these shirts to work and I get compliments on them all the time. So if you want your own cool shirts, go to beawesomereadbooks.com. And for the month of September, you can use the code HELLOBESTIES to save free shipping on your order.
Shut up, free shipping.
Free shipping. Your girl loves free shipping.
Same.
I will to get free shipping.
I will pay that extra $10. All right, besties.
You use the code. The shirts are really high quality. They will not shrink. They are size.
Tag us on the socials when you buy it.
XL. Yes, please, please. Yeah,
we can't wait to see them, guys. All right.
All season long, we'll have deals for you.
All season.
All right, back to your episode.
All right, so this season, we've got some fabulous guests, obviously, including our current guests. Some people were really excited about. We've got indie authors, and we have an audiobook narrator, my favorite audiobook narrator. I'm excited for that. But after this episode, here's what you can find for the rest of the month. We're going to read The Blood of Hercules. Mm-hmm. That'll be September 9th.
That book is everywhere.
Yes, and I haven't read it yet. We're going to read Binding 13. This one will be on September 16th. Mm-hmm. We're going to read Death of a Fairy Tale. Put that right here, Tom. That is September 23rd. I don't have one of those yet. And we're going to read Heartless Hunter for September 30th. And I've actually already read this one and very much we're going to read the sequel, but we're going to talk about this one. It's so good. So that we actually have a lot of YA this month, which is unusual for us, but
Except for Blood of Hercules.
Yeah, that is no way.
That's reverse hair. I'm looking for homie.
Everybody be fucking in that one. I am on this new kick where I really like duologies. And so there happen to be a lot of really good YA duologies right now. It's just less of a commitment for me.
I get it read
and, you know.
You're also in the middle of a very deep, deep dive into the Hunger Games.
You guys
should be, I'm going to be creating a playlist on our TikTok of her deep dive.
We can't create playlists. I already tried. We don't have those kind of fancy pants.
Listen here, TikTok. You and I are about to have words again.
We have enough followers to monetize, but not enough to make a playlist. So that's what we've got coming up this month. We do have a story graph challenge again, so you can actually see all of the books that we're going to read for season 9.
Ahead of schedule.
Go visit our website and you'll see all the stuff coming up. So yeah, Christy, thank you. You have been a fantastic guest.
Thank you.
Molly, I love you. We're back.
We're back, baby. We're back. Thank you, Christy. We'll see you next time, babe.
Okay.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on Book Besties. Don't forget to like and subscribe. The views discussed here are those of April and Molly, not those of anyone else. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Carpe Librum, the shop that has bookish things for bookish people. And right now, you can get free shipping by using the code HELLOBESTIES, which is good for the entire month of September. Today's book was Dungeons and Drama by our special guest, author Christy Boyce. Your book besties are Molly Biggs and April Watkins, editing by Thomas Watkins, and music is Sleep Sweetly by Prigida. Don't forget to follow the Book Besties on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. If you'd like to contact the Book Besties, please email us at bookbestiespod@gmail.com or visit our website, bookbestiespodcast.com. You can support the Book Besties by joining our Patreon at Book Besties Podcast.